Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Marvelous Synergy Podcast, a podcast all about the Marvel Cinematic Universe. I am your host, Andy Tai, writer of several guides to the MCU, which are also called Marvelous Synergy. In this episode, we'll be focusing on the 8th entry in the MCU, Thor: The Dark World. Joining me today is illustrator and graphic designer Matt Lin.
Yay!
Hello. Hello, Matt. How are you doing?
I'm good. That's why I cheered myself.
Yeah. That's very good to hear.
Yeah. Wow. See, I didn't know it was the 8th movie, but yeah, that's cool. You learn something every day.
That's it. That's it. Well, for everyone out there, do you want to talk about how we met?
Yeah, why not? We did meet on the Shang-Chi, right? At the Tallow Village set. You were in the same corner near me where we used to dress up.
Yeah, in the change room.
Get ready. And yeah, in the room. So I suppose you were a change room buddy? Someone that you just were trying on costumes and you know, I was trying not to laugh at the fact that you were wearing MCU underpants, themed underpants.
Of course.
Yeah, and the occasional DC one and the Pikachu. So that's how we did meet and get to, you know, chat while on set and all that. But then after further conversation, I did remember, memory served me that one day I did a free comic book day event at Books Kinokuniya. And I did remember that I did chat to you there that time.
That's right.
Because I remember you telling me, oh, you know, I'm writing this book about the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And I was like, okay, that sounds interesting. And I remember we were talking about book covers and some graphic design stuff. And yeah, so then all of that kind of clicked after I found out that over time that during our time on set that you said you were writing these books, and then it all suddenly clicked and was like, hey, didn't I speak to you once? And then I think you kind of remembered that vague first meeting at some stage too.
Yeah. I mean, I actually still have your business card from that event, but I was just really surprised that you remembered me, because, you know, you would have been talking to so many people on that day. I'm surprised that I still stood out.
You made an impression for some reason.
That's always good to know.
No, it's weird. I tend to remember some conversations really, really well. But I know, yeah, that's the remembering of names, which is the tricky thing. But I'll remember the stuff that we spoke about, and maybe not what you look like, but I'll, yeah, remember the conversation. Especially if I found it interesting. So obviously, it stuck in my mind, that conversation.
No, that's good to know. Good to know. And look, here we are several years later. Still friends. I like that.
Yep, that is true. You haven't offended me yet.
We'll see how this podcast goes.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, because we are talking about one of the best movies of the MCU, according to me.
Yeah, exactly right. Exactly right. Yeah,
I still can't believe that. What is wrong with everyone?
I don't know, Matt. I don't know. But look, let's get started with the episode, and let's enlighten everyone.
Yes, for why I like it.
All right. So Thor: The Dark World was released on the 8th of November in 2013. It was originally meant to be directed by Patty Jenkins, who actually left because she didn't like the script. If you're not familiar with the name, she would eventually direct the Wonder Woman film with Gal Gadot, and replacing her, they had Alan Taylor, who is mostly known for his television work. So he's directed episodes of The Sopranos, Mad Men, and Game of Thrones. And as Matt touched upon earlier, Thor: The Dark World is usually placed at the bottom or towards the bottom of people's lists of, you know, MCU film rankings.
Yeah, why?
So, but for some reason, you really love it. or, you know, you don't hate it as much as everyone else.
I think that's what's... Because I thought I was in the majority all these years. And then I met you, I think, and we're talking and everyone's like... And then you said, do you really seriously like the Dark World? I was like, yeah, why? And he goes... I remember you saying like something like, no one likes it. I was like, what? And then you said, so that's why I want to interview you for this podcast.
Well, you know, it would be very easy to find someone that hates the film, but to find someone that actually, you know, genuinely likes the film is very rare, shall we say. So
yeah, like I've even got the Blu-ray, you know, and I like to watch it every now and again too.
I mean, look, to be fair, I suppose I don't hate the film as much as everyone else. I do see the good parts about it.
Yep.
But let's get your, I suppose, general thoughts. What makes the film, why do you enjoy watching it?
I think for starters, I enjoyed it because I didn't like the first Thor movie.
Okay.
I really didn't like that one at all. I thought it was a bit lame. I thought the effects were awful. I thought the Warriors 3 were a bit lame. I like the comedy in the second one. I like the look of Thor. I think I like the look of Asgard even. Yeah, and yeah, I just thought we got to see a bit more of Jane Foster and Darcy. Yes, Darcy. She's very funny, and I don't know. Maybe it's because I've got a weakness for elves. Anything with elves in, I think, are cool. you know, dark elves. Woo. And yeah, and the even Loki, you know, the sense of humor and stuff like that, I thought was really good. And oh yeah, that's right. And we got a bit more of Thor's mum, Freya. Did I get that right?
Frigga.
Oh, Frigga. That's right. Kidding. Yeah, Frigga. We got to see a little bit more of her and get a bit more substance, which I thought was kind of, maybe my memory doesn't serve me right, but I thought it was a bit lacking in the first film. So.
No, you were definitely right there. But look, let's start with the general look of the film, because that's something I definitely agree with you on. The Dark World just looks so much better, and I think that's down to two things. Well, firstly, the director Alan Taylor.
Yep.
You know, he's got his experience on Game of Thrones, and was bringing that, and as well as the cinematographer. Kramer Morgenthau, and he worked on Game of Thrones as well, and I think he and Alan Taylor, they worked on some of the same episodes.
Right.
So they brought that aesthetic, and I suppose filming on actual locations really helped.
Yeah.
So if you're not too sure, the Svartalfheim, the Dark Elf home world,
yep,
they used Iceland for that, so the black sands of Icelandic.
Looks very Icelandic, doesn't it? So Yeah.
So I think, like, just generally, I mean, yeah, you also got sort of, they use different, you know, color palettes for the different areas. You got these lovely browns and greens, very earthy tones. And it just looks so much better. And Asgard as well, I think, the visual effects they got for it.
Yeah.
They're so much better. Like, there's this huge improvement, right? Because in the first film, for me, Asgard is very gold and shiny, and it didn't seem real. It didn't seem very tangible.
It was a bit sterile and too shiny. I think we had a chat. Even Thor's eyebrows were just too shiny.
Yeah, because they dyed them blonde.
Yeah, no,
really bright blonde.
Yeah, and it was just like, what's wrong? Yeah, I kept looking at his face, going, what's wrong with his face? It's what is it? And I could never put my finger on it till you tell me. So yeah, not only was Asgard shiny, even Thor's eyebrows were just too shiny.
Everything had to be gold. Yeah. But yeah, no, so definitely the introduction of, I suppose, a more earthly palette and just the way they went about shooting things is something I really appreciate with the film. And it just looks so much better.
Yes.
What did you think of Chris Hemsworth? Do you think he puts in another strong performance in this film?
Yeah, I did. Well, I think it's funny because growing up, I was never a big fan of the Avengers or Thor. Like, I used to like kind of the cartoon, the old Kirby-esque style cartoon, but as an actual character, I found his look a bit boring. So for me, it's quite interesting. I thought Chris Hemsworth brought a lot to the character and made me like him more. But maybe that was a thing for me too. In the first movie, he's Thor as a character, I thought, was a bit of a douche.
Well, it certainly starts out that way.
Yeah,
right?
he did start out that way. He did change, yes, you're correct. He did change and grow through his experiences, which we all should. I just found him, more likable. And I thought he seemed to be a lot more, I suppose he had a lot more stuff going on for him. It wasn't just like, yay, I'm the prince and I'm going to be king. It's, yeah, there's a whole lot of other things going on.
He's a lot more mature this time around.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
That's the word you were looking
for.
Yeah,
I was looking for maturity. He had lots more depth to him. Yeah, seemed shallow in the first one.
Yeah, fair enough, fair enough. Yeah. What did you think of his relationship with Jane this time around? For me, I like Jane in this film a lot more. I love the way she interacted with Thor. What are your thoughts?
Same. Yeah, I thought she had a lot more input, and she wasn't just treated like a... Because in the first one, she kind of seemed to have gotten ditched around a lot, didn't she? From memory. It's just like, oh yeah, she's a scientist, but that was kind of it.
Yeah, that was sort of my impression of it, you know. They try to build her up, but then the character didn't really go anywhere. Whereas this one, I like how you really... Like, you know, in the end, she uses her brains to sort of, play with the portals and teleport the Dark Elves away and all that sort of stuff.
Yep. Yeah, it kind of, yeah, like you said, teleport has showed that she, yeah, you know, she her character is a scientist.
I suppose what helps as well is that Erik Selvig he's sort of slightly more sidelined, you know.
Yeah, he's
got those mental issues and all that. And they gave him a more comedic role, and I think that suits him a lot.
He was the straight. He was the straight act, wasn't he? The straight comedic relief, whereas like Darcy, she was.
Yeah, Darcy. Oh, she. What can we say about Darcy?
Yeah, she had some good
Kat
lines.
Kat Dennings. Yeah, she's brilliant, brilliant. I love how she, the intern got an intern.
Yes, I did like that.
that cracked me up so much when I saw that. The very concept of it as well, right?
Yeah.
Bossing this poor British guy around.
Yep.
Oh.
Yeah.
Where's my intern, Matt? How come I don't have an intern? I should get an intern.
You should. you could boss them around during the podcast.
Exactly, right?
Yeah, press that button.
You shouldn't be saying that.
Exactly. Who wrote these lines? Who wrote this? But yeah, I think all of the, I suppose, besides Professor Svelvig, a lot of them got a bit more time in the second movie compared to the first one. Even, to me, like the Warriors 3 actually got to show, you know, a little bit more about themselves and, you know, to actually
interesting.
Show that. To me, I didn't see really why they also consider these Warriors 3. I thought they're fighting or whatever in the first one seemed a little bit, you know, lackluster, whereas this you know, I suppose they kind of set the tone with that first battle, but
I suppose for me, I was still a bit disappointed at the fact that the Warriors 3 weren't really used to their full potential.
That is
they were
true.
Sort of just there still, right? And and like you said, they're in that first battle, and some of them then help Thor and Loki get out of Asgard, but like there's not much there. And then there's that weird, you know, the weird thing where Odin's hinting to Thor that he should get together with Sif. Like, that kind of went nowhere. Like, I don't know why they bothered leaving that in the film. It's just like there are small things that sort of every time I watch the film, like it just bothers me, right? Because you go, oh, they didn't do anything there. They should have done this. And I guess maybe that's why some people do dislike the film so much, because it seems to be a bit of a mishmash of ideas. You know, they're going, that's cool, but nothing really seemed cohesive. And there are a few things that were really developed.
Okay, maybe like what you said with Sif, maybe that it's they were just showing you a lot of the supposed pressures or responsibilities on Thor's shoulders. So it wasn't just, you know, being a more mature person, looking after the eight realms and all that kind of stuff. And
the nine realms?
Oh, the nine realms. Okay. Seven realms.
Which realm are you leaving out?
that one that I forgot.
That one. Yeah. The one we don't like.
Yeah, what's your realm? Where all the bad things go?
Yeah, what's your realm?
But yeah, I think maybe it was a demonstration of what's, or, you know, it was an indication of what's going on for Thor as well. It's not just battling ogres and stuff. It was like, you know, he's got this pressure to get with Lady Sif. And maybe that was meant to be as a bit of a contrast to show, you know, like you know, Thor's being told all this, but he obviously loves Jane Foster. Maybe it wasn't.
That he does, that he does.
He does, he does. Maybe that was just to say, you know what? Yeah, thanks for the advice, Dad, but yeah, I like Jane.
Well, I mean, as you would know, the ending of the film sees Thor return to Earth and kiss Jane in one of the post-credit scenes. But yes. There was actually, they filmed a different scene. And in that scene, Thor and Jane actually broke up, which is very interesting to me.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And I suppose it's interesting that they sort of decided that they should be together. But then you watch Thor Ragnarok and you get that throwaway line of, oh, Jane dumped you, Thor.
Yeah, that's like, right. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Why did they change? Ooh. And like, it's like, why didn't they go with that first ending they had then? You know, why the change?
Well, I suppose it makes you ask questions. What happened? What did he do wrong? What did she do wrong? Actually, well, what did he do? Because she broke up with him, didn't it? That's the impression we all got from the other
movies.
That's it. Like, yeah, it wasn't like it was a mutual breakup. It's a
mutual dumping.
Mutual dumping with, you know, kind of grown apart and I want this and she wants that. It's like, no, she dumped you. So I suppose maybe we'll get all these answers in the next Love and Thunder, won't we?
Yeah, yes, I hope so. I mean, Jane, we know Jane Foster's in that, so hopefully that period of their relationship or the breakup of it gets resolved or we get some more answers about that.
That'll be very
interesting to see.
Yes. Yeah. But yeah, I did. Yeah, Jane. I even liked her when she went to Asgard. I thought her interaction with everyone too was a lot more, be more about the character.
I like how she held her own. Like she wasn't sort of awestruck so much. Like she was like, oh, she was fascinated.
Yep.
And I suppose that goes back to her scientific brain or analytical brain.
Yes.
And you're right. I think that you just see a bit more of her character there, which is absolutely. I mean, good on them for doing that.
Mm. And then in doing so too, I think we got to see a little bit more Frigga as well. So.
Yeah, Frigga actually had something to do, and then they kill her off, which is a bit disappointing. But
we even got to see her do some sword skills.
Yeah, that's the thing, right? Like you watch the first film, and I mean, you know, she's a great queen, but Rene Russo didn't have much to do.
No.
I mean, she held a sword at one point, like trying to defend Odin. I was just sleeping, but like. That didn't amount to much.
Yeah, it didn't.
But seeing her go toe-to-toe against Valakith, I was very happy that they gave her a little something before killing her off, you know?
Mm, exactly. You know, if you're going to be Odin's lady bud, you know, I reckon you've got to swing some weapons, I think.
Swing some weapons, yeah. I must say, the funeral scene, that for me is one of the best scenes in the film. The imagery combined with the music, I was just oh wow, it's very impactful, and it works even though we don't get to know Frigga for all that long.
Yeah, you're right. It's it does have an impact, I think, and I think maybe too it speaks volumes of what obviously the Asgardians felt for her and thought of her. So. You know, it's a nice thing to see.
Right, let's talk about Loki now, because I think even those who hate the Dark World, I think they all agree that the whole interaction between Thor and Loki was definitely one of the best parts, if not the best parts of the film. Mm. Do you agree, Matt?
Yes, I did like, especially that bit where they're walking through the halls and he turns into Captain America. I think that was really cool. And
yeah, the Hiddleston and Hemsworth have really good banter, right? And you can see them really playing off with each other and with the humor as well. And it just adds to, I think, again, like Thor being a much more likable character this time around. You can relate to him because he's sort of letting his guard down at points, right? He's relaxed.
Yeah.
He's not so uptight.
Yes, that is true. And I think it kind of, like you said, it displays or showed us a bit more of the complexity of Thor and Loki's relationship as well.
Mm.
So that whole trust, mistrust thing going on.
Yeah. I mean, with Loki, you don't know when he's sort of trying to trick you and all that sort of stuff. And I guess that's the whole point of that relationship they have, right? Thor's trying to really work out when he can and can't trust Loki.
Yep.
Did you believe it when Loki quote unquote died? I'm doing air quotes.
maybe I think it, when I was in the cinema seeing it for the first time, I was like, "What? Oh no!" And I thought, "Oh no!" And then how it finished, it's like, "Ah, oh, that cheeky monkey."
Well, did you know, Matt, that they actually did kill off Loki?
Oh really? And then they changed their mind. Is that what happened?
Well, they did test screenings and people were like, "Nah, he's not dead." Like, they didn't believe it. And so they had to, they filmed the bit where Loki sort of reveals that, "No, I'm still alive." Oh. Which is, yeah, it's like the fact that they even considered killing off the character and they, in fact, well, did it, really.
Yeah.
I was like, wow. Well, you know, they were prepared for the backlash probably, so...
Well, that's pretty amazing. And then imagine if they'd killed him off then, he wouldn't have had his TV series, would he?
I guess not, right? Maybe. I mean, they're probably, well, who knows? Who knows? Yeah, they might have brought him back in some other way.
Yeah, true.
But it's a testament to Hiddleston's portrayal of the character, the fact that he's so beloved.
Yes.
That they it took people not believing the ending they had in the film for them to sort of add things and change it. But look, he got into another Thor film. He got into an two more Avengers films, and effectively he secured more money from Marvel. Really?
Oh yeah.
So good on him.
Yeah, I say good on him because you're right. I like Loki too, and like you said, it's all because of Tom's portrayal of the character. Everyone likes Loki.
Well, yeah, of course. I mean, that's why he stuck around for so long. What did you think of the villain of this time around, Malekith, as portrayed by Christopher Eccleston?
Yeah, I didn't realise that was Doctor Who, one of the many Doctor Whos. Really?
I mean, he's under all that prosthetic stuff, right? So yeah. I suppose it's a bit hard to recognise him.
And the voice and all that. Yeah, like the whole Dark Elf thing, like it was very cool, but I think maybe that's one of the things people don't like is like, but why? Kind of like, why did they... We didn't really get a good reason why they hated the Asgardians and vice versa, or was it just because the Dark Elves are evil? And
well, essentially, it almost boiled down to that. I mean, they had the whole backstory where Odin's father, Bor, he stopped Malekith from plunging the universe into darkness.
That's
which,
right.
Like, what kind of plan is that? Like, what does that mean, right? I mean, already the it's a bit wishy-washy there. Mm. And so then, you know, the Dark Elves just want revenge and all that sort of stuff, but... I think that's it, right? Like, when it comes down to it, Malekith's plan doesn't make sense because we don't quite understand it.
Yeah.
Like, what does turning the universe into darkness really mean? Like, you're just turning out all the lights and everyone can't see? Like, what? Right. Like, that, that to me never like, if they took the time to really maybe explain that bit a bit more, Malekith would be, I suppose, a more... memorable character, a bigger threat, because as it stands, he's not. You know, most people don't even remember who he is.
Yeah, you're right. He wasn't like Frigga would have taken him out of it. Was it just for his ogre elf with him that just suddenly rocked up, wasn't it?
Oh, curse! Yeah, we'll talk about him in a moment.
One of the cursed.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're right. I suppose there's that simple thing. Oh, it's a dark elf, so they must want a dark world. If it was a chaos elf, it would probably want a chaotic
world. it's not very imaginative as a plot.
Yeah, you're right. That whole premise is a little bit. Yeah, it's a little. But I think for me, I just I didn't care. I just let that wash over me. I just thought the dark elves looked good.
Maybe it's because of the cool looking costumes. Exactly. I must say, I do like the way they look, and especially all the sort of the dark elf foot soldiers, how they had masks and that hid their sort of facial expressions, and it was a bit creepy, like you couldn't read them.
You're right.
I love that bit.
They were a bit creepy looking. Maybe I was yeah I was forgiving on the plot thing because I just, ooh, Dark Elves.
You're like,
yay.
Ooh, armor, ooh, oh, pointy armor, ears.
Yeah, pointy ears. Oh, scary. Who cares? Scary. Bad people.
Oh. Bad people. I'll release a cut of the film for you where it's just all the Dark Elves marching across the camera, you know, off, across the screen, sorry. Yeah. And just showing off the armor. They'll do like a pose before they move on.
More elves. More. Yeah, the plot was a bit weak, but I think I think he did portray the character pretty well. You know, he gave him, you know, a little bit of, he seemed menacing, seemed pretty, but not super menacing. Yeah, but yeah, like I think, what's the actor that played him?
Christopher Eccleston.
Yeah, I think Christopher did really, you know, did well. I thought, yeah. Besides the lackluster reasoning for him to be angry or some,
that's the thing. Like I do like his performance. I think there was something there. It's just unfortunately it's so forgettable because it's wrapped up in this somewhat nonsensical plot. It's just a huge shame. But I feel more sorry for let me get this right, because I've been practicing, right? This Adewale Akinoye Agbaje, and he plays Curse. And he spent so long in makeup and costume,
right?
I dare say he's more forgettable than Malekith, which is a huge shame, because his costume and the prosthetics and all that, brilliant, absolutely brilliant, and then they don't give him much to do except be this big hulking henchman.
Well, I suppose once you get that whopping dirty jewel stuck in your gut, you know, your only job then is to just, like, you know, destroy or protect Malekith. Isn't that the only thing to do?
I mean, I guess, but they, like, I wish we got to know the character a bit more, besides the fact that he loves Malekith and he would almost do anything for him in that sort of sense. Like, it's just like, I want a bit more. You're putting all this guy under heavy makeup and all that. I just want to, like, make him more make him memorable from his for his actions and characterization, as opposed to just the way he looks.
Yeah. Oh, interesting.
I kind of feel sorry for the actor having to go through all that, you know, each and every day, like the makeup process, because it's you know, you're sitting there and having people sort of prod at your face and because Adewale's a great actor. I don't know if you've ever seen this show Lost, in that he plays a priest named Echo.
That TV show?
Yeah, the TV show.
By Mr. Bray Brabham's Ape.
That guy, that guy.
Yeah, I do watch Lost, I think, maybe one or two seasons, and eventually I just got bored because I thought, where's this going?
You missed out on 4 seasons of more questions than answers, man. More questions than answers, I guess.
Exactly.
But anyway.
Yeah. Just got sick of all the questions.
But I suppose my point is, like, you've got a capable actor and you're not using him to his full potential, and I get annoyed when they do that. that's my gripe, right? That's my gripe.
Okay. well, what about James Foster's first date? What's his, Chris O'Dowd? He didn't get you.
Oh yeah, with Richard. Oh man, yeah, he's such a great actor as well. I don't know why they stuck him in. I suppose he didn't need a big role per se.
No, he didn't.
He did, but you remembered him, right? Like he had a great scene with Jane, I guess.
Yes.
I suppose that's a big difference, right? He had a great scene, whereas Adewale, he didn't really get a memorable moment.
I suppose before he got turned into the cursed, he was just, like, shown as that, to me, that dutiful second in command kind of faithful, you know, second general or whatever, and they'll just always carry out those do and all that kind of stuff.
Protect the master. Yeah.
That's it. So I suppose in one way that's like, well, there's not much more story arc to show about that guy. You know, like you said, we didn't get to see really why the Dark Elves, I can't remember. I know they had that beautiful, the book with all the Illumination and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and how it had the anime. That was brilliant.
Yeah, love brilliantly that. Done. And yeah, I was like, wow, look at that. But I think I can't remember now if it had much depth to it. It was like, or like you said, once upon a time, there were the dark elves and they wanted to make the world dark.
We stopped them and now they're back. Yeah. Now they're surprise!
Back. Yeah, and that's it. So, okay.
I suppose they went to so much effort, right? So, like we talked about earlier, they went to Iceland fill in for Svartalfheim. They had great costumes for the Dark Elves, and they also created a whole language for them. David J. Peterson, who created the Valyrian and Dothraki languages on Game of Thrones, and he created the Dark Elf language. I do believe it's called Shivai Sif. I don't think I'm pronouncing it correctly, but there you go.
Oh wow!
But yeah, I mean they went to effort, right? They're to sort of create a nuanced race, and then it's just somewhere along the way it they lost it.
Yeah.
That to me is, I suppose, one of the biggest failings of the film.
Oh. I still like it.
After all that, man.
I'm going to still ignore everything you say. Yeah, it's still in my top 10.
Well, it could be in your top 10. It's still in my bottom 10.
Yeah, your bottom 10. Okay, so at the opposite end.
Like, I don't know if I would put it last, though. That's the interesting thing. Like, I there are so many aspects that I genuinely do like. I suppose, if I had to choose between watching Thor 1 and Thor 2 again, I'd watch Thor 2 simply because it does look so much better.
Yeah.
I'm a very visual person, so you know, the color palette, the whole cinematography and everything is just a huge, huge step up from the first film there.
Mm. Yeah, like you said, the worlds and the locations. Even like when the Dark Elves manage to get into Asgard and the ships are flying around and stuff like that, it's I thought that was really well done.
Yeah, I mean the first film didn't. The action was, I would call it okay. It wasn't spectacular or anything like that. It was very standard fighting and I wasn't a big fan of Thor fighting on Jotunheim. Like I just got a bit bored, and the action this time around so much better. I suppose it was more varied as well, right? So you had action on the ground, and then you had the ships in the air and Asgard.
Yep.
Tense standoff on Svartalfheim the fact that they learnt in some respects and then dropped the ball in others, which is so baffling to me.
You forgot the ether coming out of Jane, and you know,
yeah,
and Malekith work in the ether when he, you know, like
that was pretty cool.
And then the comedic moments with Darcy in the car, is that right? Oh, the intern getting the car and squashing that.
Oh, smashing some Dark Elves.
Yeah, the Dark Elves.
And then Darcy having a little smooch with Ian.
Exactly.
I also love, I mean, that reminds me, when Thor and Malekith, you know, they're bashing each other and they're going through all the different portals, and then you got Mjolnir having to fly everywhere.
That's right, yeah. Yeah, just to keep up. And that whole that comedic thing. What I felt is like, ch-ch-ch-ch, and then Darcy goes, mew mew.
Mew mew, yeah. Yeah, it's again, like some parts that they improved, right? And then others, it's just like, why did they do that? But it's
you could ignore all of that for mew mew.
that brought it up for you, right? Yeah, that, 10 out of 10.
Exactly. The ether dropping things through the portal with the kids in the car park. I thought that was interesting. Thor's costume looked better. His eyebrows looked better. Or even that scene where he comes in and, you know, throws his hammer after his mum had, after Frigg had been stabbed, and it's done that slow motion bit, and the hammer goes, and it's just like, wow, they did that, they shot that really well. And
your heart sinks at that moment, right? Like, you just feel the sadness and his rage, and it's like, oh no, oh, and they're getting away, and there's like, he can't get to them in time. Mm. It's heartbreaking, heartbreaking.
Yeah, and that use of the slow motion, awesome.
Yeah, see, that's the thing. Alan Taylor's a great director. I think he knows how to compose shots and direct actors and all that. It's just the material he's given to work with, right? You can only do so much if the script's not in a good shape. There's only so much you can do with it.
Yeah.
If you know, the in editing, you know, they go in another direction, there's not much you can go with it. Because the thing is, in interviews, Alan Taylor has said that during the actual filmmaking process, Marvel gave him free rein and he felt he could make the film that he wanted. And it was in post-production that he felt he was losing control.
Right, okay.
So I think I have a feeling some higher up peeps at Marvel might have maybe gone, oh, we want the story to go in this direction,
right?
Because XYZ or something like that, and he unfortunately didn't get much of a say.
Better get on the blow and have a chat with that Kevin guy.
Yeah, Kevin guy. Well, I have a feeling, like, from what I can tell, Kevin Feige is always siding with the directors, or he's always championing for their ideas to make it into the final film.
Yeah.
I have a feeling it might be some other executives. Because this was at the time when Marvel was still, they had something called the Marvel Creative Committee. There was this group of like comic book writers and other people who would watch the film or read the script and they'd give feedback, but they wouldn't necessarily understand why Marvel Studios were doing the things they were doing.
Right. Okay.
And so Kevin Feige was always sort of butting heads, and trying to get his vision and the filmmaker's vision onto the screen, and sadly he didn't win them all.
Okay, director's cut.
Wouldn't mind.
Yeah,
I mean, I said this in a previous podcast. Like, I don't see the point of any of the MCU films having a director's cut, because I think A, there's just so many of them, and B, I don't know how much you could really do. But in this case, I would love to see what Alan Taylor's original vision and what he wanted to do for the franchise. I'm very intrigued. Yeah,
now you've told me that, I'm intrigued too.
We'll write to him. We should write to him.
I'm going to go write an email straight away.
I'm sure you'll be able to find his email address floating around on the internet.
Yeah, I'll just get on LinkedIn or something.
Yeah. I'll show you. Well, I mean, because we were in Shang-Chi, we should have some sort of connection, right? Right?
You're right. Yeah, you're right. I think, I'll just get on to Daniel. Say, hey, Daniel. I was extra number. I can't even remember my number anymore.
You don't even remember? Oh, no, that's no good.
Jeez, I've forgotten my number. We have to remember that every day, didn't we?
Yeah, that I mean, I forgot mine as well, to be fair.
Okay.
You don't, like, after, well, how many years is it now? It's over a year. You just don't need that information. You just forget it. Oh, jeez.
But still, I don't care what anyone says. It's still in my top 10, so...
Well, where do you put it? Where do you put it in your top 10, out of curiosity?
Maybe I suppose in the middle-ish, or...
The middle? What, number five?
Yeah, maybe five or... Oh, maybe six or seven. Let me think about it.
Oh, it's going down. It's going down. Am I convincing you?
You put me on a spot. I can easily say my number one is always Winter Soldier.
Oh, okay. Fair.
I just like the action. Thought the story was tight. Winter Soldier, great character. Thought a bit more Natasha, a bit more Captain. That was really cool. Thor Ragnarok, second. Because of the, just the comedy just got me, and the vision and the look of it. Wasn't expecting that. Probably Ant-Man. Yeah, because Paul Rudd.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, Paul Rudd just, fine, too good. Oh no, that's only three.
and you haven't even, we're not even putting Thor the Dark One anyway.
Oh,
yeah.
Iron Man. Yeah, gotta go with the first Iron
one.
Man.
Okay. Yeah,
because it was so groundbreaking, and I was amazed when I saw it. I thought visually, and when I heard Robert Downey Jr. was Iron Man, I never liked Iron Man when I read the comics. I thought, I don't really want to see this. But I had a friend tell me, you gotta see it, you'll like it. So I went, okay.
they were right.
Yeah, no, they were right. Damn them. Yeah, I was in the cinema going, damn, this looks so good.
I want to hate it.
Yeah, I want to hate it, but I can't. I can admit I was wrong. So, yeah, there's that one. What else? Guardians of the Galaxy, because, again, that was just so different and funny. I like the comedy. Yeah, maybe. And I have to admit, I think, actually, yeah, maybe Shang-Chi. Yeah, Shang-Chi would pip.
Shang-Chi. Not biased at all.
Yeah, would just pip Thor the Dark World. I think that's funny because I remember when I saw Shang-Chi the first time, I liked it, but I thought it was missing something. And then I watched it again, and I thought, ooh, there's actually more to it than what I got from my first viewing. And then I think I've watched it another two times since. And every time I've watched it, I've enjoyed it a lot more. I keep getting more out of it.
Is it because you keep spotting yourself, you spot yourself in more scenes? Is
that well, there's that. And I have to pause it and go, yeah, okay, that's me. I appreciate more, like, I think the scenery and the way things are shot and...
But you're still putting it above Thor the Dark World, so... I mean, look, it's still in your top 10 still, I think, yeah.
So he's there, and then trying to think which other ones. You might have to help. Civil War. Civil War's pretty good. I think I'll go, Ant-Man and the Wasp as well. Will be in the top 10.
Okay.
Are we allowed to throw in the Spider-Mans, or they're not really?
Yeah, they're part of the MCU. Which one are the Tom Holland Spider-Man films, right?
Yeah. Well, I was a big fan of the Tobey Maguire ones, I have to admit. But they're not counted, are they?
No, they're not technically part of the MCU. I mean, you've got the... spoiler alert for those who haven't seen Spider-Man No Way Home.
Yes.
You got Maguire coming over.
Someone out there may have not seen it yet.
Yeah, like you, Matt? Like you?
No, I went and saw it, I think, the week it opened.
Oh, good. I was worried that I spoiled something there for a moment.
The Tom Holland ones, I just thought, him as Spider-Man was just, he's just really good as a character and... Yeah, so is that 10? Is that 10 movies?
I think so. Yeah, I'm going to have to take your word
for
it.
Yeah, we'll see that. I think there's elements of maybe like Infinity War and Endgame that are... Actually, one of those I thought was a bit lame. Not a bit, but it was a bit of a letdown.
Maybe I'll get you onto that podcast episode just go, this is one of the most beloved films, but Matt hates it.
Yeah, but I don't like it. It was lame. those are my favorite ones. Oh, yeah. Guardians of the Galaxy 2. That was lame.
Maybe that's the one I'll get you on back for.
Yeah, there you go. Dark World sits way above that one. Same with Thor, Iron Man 3. I didn't really, And the Hulk movies.
But there's only been one, so.
The movie, Hulk movie.
That one.
I haven't even seen it. I just went, nah, not going to watch it. That's terrible, isn't it?
It doesn't have Mark Ruffalo in it.
I know, it's terrible. So judgmental. But yes, everyone out there, go buy Thor the Dark World Blu-ray. You won't regret it.
You won't regret it. There you have it, folks. Matt's wonderful endorsement of the film. That's not in his top five of MCU.
But it's in my top 10.
And so you should all go rush out and buy it. All right. I'll be sure to do that tomorrow just for you, Matt.
Yes.
Even though I own several copies of all the films already, I'll do it. I'll get extra copies of Thor the Dark World.
It's probably on special at JB, I'm sure.
Yeah. Check the bargain bin.
It's in the buy 2, get 1 free. Oh, gosh.
Well, unfortunately, that's all we've got time for. Thank you very much, Matt, for coming on.
No, thanks, Andy, for having me.
I would love to hear your thoughts on Thor the Dark World. Do you agree with Matt and like the film, or do you absolutely hate it? Feel free to reach out. Please like or follow the Marvelous Synergy Facebook, Instagram, and Tumblr pages, and subscribe to this podcast to hear future episodes. If you want to learn more about the MCU, please check out my guides to the films, which can be found on Amazon. The books are filled with info on how the films were made, deleted scenes, Easter eggs, filming locations, and other bits of trivia. And with that, I'll catch you next time.
Bye.